From SBR News, this is Inland Journal. I'm Doug Nadvornik. It's been 10 years since Gonzaga and the University of Washington formed their health partnership in Spokane. That partnership kept UW medical students in Spokane and gave Gonzaga the momentum it needed to expand its health sciences programs. Daryl Potok from the UW and John Skloot from Gonzaga join us to talk about the state of the partnership. The UW has also expanded its RIDE dental education program in Spokane in partnership with Eastern Washington University. We'll talk with Dean Andre Ritter about that. Spokane has a long history with student foreign exchange programs. One of the new ones brought a dozen Parisian students to the Inland Northwest this month for a two-week visit. We'll talk with two of those students and one of their teachers, and with the director of the program about the benefit of giving young people access to cultures other than their own. It's an education-themed Inland Journal this week. When it comes to medical education, Spokane is in an enviable position. It hosts students from two medical schools. Few American cities can say that. Together, they welcome about 120 new students each year. Spokane is also home to several residency programs that train newly graduated doctors. Spokane's medical education scene has experienced remarkable growth during the last 15 years. It goes back to the days when the University of Washington and Washington State were partners in administering the UW's five-state medical program here. At that time, Spokane had only 20 first-year medical students. Eventually, WSU decided to go its own way and create the Elson S. Floyd College of Medicine. The UW had to find a new partner to help with its operations in Spokane, and it formed a partnership with Gonzaga University that is now 10 years old.
It was a big, audacious idea to have a big public university partner with a small private Jesuit university. And, you know, many people said, how's that going to work? And it's just worked beautifully.
Daryl Potok is the UW School of Medicine's Associate Dean and the Chief of Medical Education for the UW-Gonzaga Health Partnership.
Shared values and communication really paved the way for us, and we've accomplished some great things.
Daryl, I know there were some questions about a public university working together with a private university, but did you run into issues along the way that were kind of sticky, or has it been smoother than you thought it might be?
I would say yes and yes. There have been issues that have arisen, but it's been easier because we recognize our shared values and, like I said earlier, our communication. We talk all the time, and you know, when there are big issues that come up that may abut up against the church and state line, we're well aware of those, and we steer clear of those, and we talk through it and how we're going to approach them. So I think there have been issues, but I think by and large the partnership has been wildly successful.
John Skloot is the executive director of the Health Partnership and a senior advisor to Gonzaga's president.
When the partnership between the University of Washington and Washington State University, when they separated and Washington State University started their own medical school, the University of Washington, I'd say to its great credit, was committed to remaining in Eastern Washington and operating their medical school program here. And it's that commitment to this region that matches exactly with Gonzaga's commitment to the region. And that mission alignment has, I think, has really made this, I would say, easier or less complicated than many might have expected.
The physical symbol of that partnership is a four-story building called the 840 building at the south end of Gonzaga's campus, where UW's medical and dental students and Gonzaga human physiology students learn. So what did the universities need from each other at the very start, and how have you fulfilled those?
Start by saying we've grown from what we need to what we want. And that's a really important inflection point. And initially, what we needed was some basic science education for the medical students. We also needed space. And I think if we look and see how many joint faculty we've hired, we look at this building, we look at the new programs that it spawned, the expansion of the number of students we have here, I think it's been wildly successful. You know, at the same time, we're remaining true to, as John said, our values. And, you know, for years we've had a great presence and basically an award-winning rural programs. And we continue to be out in the rural spaces with our students, with our programs, doing research out there, and I think the collaboration with Gonzaga has solidified that and will take it to a whole new level.
And I think one of the really important components from the student perspective is that the students are co-registered as Gonzaga students. And therefore, they have access to Gonzaga resources, facilities, health and counseling center, our gym, access to all the facilities on campus. And that was important, not just from the University of Washington School of Medicine's approach, their accreditation standards, but it was also important to make sure that the medical students felt a part of this community. And Gonzaga has been really proud to offer that to the medical students. I think from Gonzaga's standpoint, certainly one, the foundation was to ensure that we were a component of the training of healthcare professionals that our region needs. That's the primary focus. It has also really presented Gonzaga with an opportunity to highlight our health science programs, to expand and introduce new health science programs. I think that's been a real benefit to our programs. It's been a real benefit to our community as well, that we are now training students across additional health science programs.
Has Gonzaga sort of been a feeder program to the UW School of Medicine?
Wanting to be careful, not technically, no, because there are no reserved spots for Gonzaga graduates in each class. That being said, I think historically over the past 10 years, there have been at least a few Gonzaga graduates in each of those classes. But one of the things that we always try to focus on, of course, is leading with our students. And I'll kind of get to that question a little bit in the feeder aspect, in that the medical students here are incredibly generous with their time and talking to the undergraduate students who are thinking about medical school, talking to them about how to best position themselves, mentoring them about the approach to medical school. It has also provided Gonzaga undergraduate students with really highly specialized and very unusual access to partnerships, dual research programs. I mean, undergraduate students doing summer research programs with medical students and medical school faculty, that's very unusual. Our undergraduate students having access to the anatomy suite in this building and being taught by a UW anatomist, that's very unusual. So all of that really certainly increases our undergraduate students' want to think about medical school and some of the real sort of foundational experiences they need to really increase their chances of getting into medical school.
Across the street from the building that houses the medical and dental students is the SEER building that houses the UW's MedX program for physician assistant students. It's part of what the schools call the Health Peninsula. So does the Health Peninsula include just the UW and Gonzaga programs, or does it include WSU or Eastern's increased presence? Even Whitworth has a presence down in the U District.
Yeah, I think when we refer to the peninsula, we refer to right in this parking lot area here, you know, the 840 building, 840 and Sear, basically. You know, we have the medical school program, we have the MedX program, our physician assistant program, we now have the dental school, and we have Eastern Washington University's nursing school and their communication school all right here, and they're going to be moving their dental hygiene program over here. So really just a wonderful confluence and synergy, I think, for interprofessional education moving forward.
Since the start of the partnership 10 years ago, Gonzaga has started its undergraduate program in public health. We've started a bachelor's in neuroscience. We've increased the capacity in our human physiology program and in our nursing program. And that's all kind of contributive to this ecosystem that we've created here.
So you're at 10 years. What do 15 and 20 look like?
It's a great question. My crystal ball's got a cataract. But I think that we are reaching out into the communities and doing a needs-based assessment and then doing research based on that. And I think what we're really looking at is, together with Gonzaga's School of Public Health and the outreach, and just amplifying what we can do in some of those rural communities and doing it in a more longitudinal fashion, so it'll be more meaningful and impactful for those rural communities. I think that's a big thing. I think the other thing that's exciting, I know Dr. Jones, our president, is interested in engineering and medicine. Gonzaga has a new bioscience program. So I think there's a lot of potential here. And I know that our presidents are hopefully getting together in the near future. And I think they will plot the course for us. But it's going to be exciting no matter what it is.
So looking ahead toward the future, are there extra buildings here? Is there any space left on this campus? Are you pretty much built out in this area right now?
I would say certainly from the Gonzaga campus perspective, our current acreage, we're pretty well built out. But that was certainly one of the components of the partnership when it was founded and formed 10 years ago, was in order to guarantee its long-term sustainability, certainly a facility was necessary. For its first 7 years, it was on Schoenberg Center on Gonzaga University's campus, which, as I say, it was a great facility, but it wasn't constructed for medical education. So the ability of this partnership and the energy and this ecosystem that we're developing to attract the private investment for this facility was certainly really significant. Where that expansion may continue to grow, that's part of what we're going to really talk about and figure out in the next decade.
John Skloot is the executive director of the University of Washington Gonzaga University Health Partnership. He's also senior advisor to Gonzaga's president. Daryl Podick is the chief of medical education for the partnership and associate dean for the University of Washington School of Medicine. As I mentioned earlier, the 840 building that hosts UW's medical school is now also the home to its dental school, which began in the Spokane area in 2008. That program is called RIDE, Rural Initiatives in Dental Education. Eastern Washington University is the partner institution. It enrolls 16 new students each year. For the last month, dental school dean Andre Ritter has lived in Spokane to get a deep look at how RIDE operates.
Over the past year, we have been able to grow the program and really set it up the way that we feel it should have been. In terms of the physical space, we were able to get additional funding from the state to increase the number of students that participate in the program, as well as to develop a new facility where we're recording this right now in the Health Peninsula. So the timing was right for us to be immersed in the community and raising awareness for oral health as well as for our RIDE program.
So why is this such a good space for you?
It allows our students, faculty, and staff to be under one roof. We didn't have this up until we opened this facility in the fall. And up until we were able to open this space, this new space, our students were training in a Catalyst building, a little bit in the Eastern as well as some of their dental hygiene programs. So there was not a lot of adjacencies that we now have here in this building. So with this expansion and the increased number of students, we now need a preclinical lab, a simulation lab, which is where dental students learn in their second year how to really do things with their hands in a simulated environment before they go in and begin to treat patients in the third year. So with the expansion of the program in 2024, we not only increased the number of students, but we expanded the curriculum from 1 to 2 years. And then as part of the second year, we then had to have a state-of-the-art training space and simulation, and we were able to build that here in this space.
So Eastern for a long time has had a clinic down on the River Point campus where their students can continue to practice along with other dentists. That is moving up here as well, is that correct?
So the Eastern Dental Hygiene Program is moving across the street from us at the Sear Building. And that also provides opportunities for us to continue and maybe even strengthen that collaboration, because they're going to have a clinical facility to support their nationally recognized dental hygiene program.
So you share a building with the medical school, the School of Medicine, and you're across the street from the PA program, the MedX program. What is being in proximity to those? How does that help you?
So our students in dentistry have anatomy classes, for example, with the students in the School of Medicine as part of the WAMI program. We don't currently have classes with GU or with dental hygiene outside of the clinical spaces that I shared before. But this proximity, I think, provides opportunity for further collaboration. So it's part of our vision for the program to continue to grow is we want to continue to develop opportunities for education as well as research collaboration.
So in terms of placing your students, let's say, in those rural areas, what are the, where are the successes you've had and where are the challenges?
We had a great trajectory of success in returning our students or placing them in those shortage areas. The RIDE program, since it started in 2008, about 80% of our graduates go back and practice in rural and underserved areas, many times in dental practices, but also in community health centers. I feel strongly that the reason we have such a great success is that we not only have recruitment from those areas, so our director of recruitment is from Yakima as well, so there's a lot of emphasis on recruiting applicants from those areas for dental school. In addition to that, as part of the program, they train here in Spokane, but also in the fourth year of dental school, each of the right students spend 6 months doing clinical dentistry in a community health center across the eastern part of the state. That allows them to further sort of be immersed in those communities. They sort of develop ties even with patients and family of patients in those settings. And many times they are recruited by those community health centers, which is something that I have witnessed, it happens many times.
So even though you're putting more of your students out in those areas, is there still a great demand for dentists out in those rural areas especially?
Absolutely. There's an incredible amount of need in shortage areas in the state of Washington, but also across the nation, in areas that don't have dentists or dental hygienists and other health professions and serving the public. There's an incredible need in the majority of the counties in the state of Washington. 38 of the 39 counties are designated health profession shortage areas. We definitely have the opportunity to do more in those areas. And I think with the expansion of the RIDE program, doubling the class size and increasing the amount of time they're training here in the eastern part of the state, we will continue to address those shortage areas.
So you're able to kind of hit it through the admissions process as well in terms of targeting the students from different parts of the state who might be more likely to stay in Eastern Washington.
Absolutely. And we also, with the expanded number of students, with more students, we are able to attract students from adjacent states as well. So we have a few students from Montana and Idaho as well. The future expansion of the program includes establishing partnerships with institutions in Montana and other states as part of the WAMI program to potentially attract students from those areas so that they can also continue to contribute or contribute as well to shortage areas in those states. The WAMI program at UW-Madison is really our model. WAMI has been in place for much longer than our RIDE program is. But it is a model in terms of educating and training the next generation of physicians or healthcare providers in addressing shortage in access to care across the region. And our vision is for a RIDE program to grow along those lines. There are many states in the Pacific Northwest that don't have dental schools. So we see this as an opportunity for us to extend our program in those areas and address the need for dental education as well as oral health care in those communities.
I suppose especially as we know that dental health plays a bigger role in human health than we originally thought.
Absolutely, yeah. That's a very good point. I think still today there's a big disconnect between the mouth and the rest of the body, right? In dental schools, for the most part, we don't, and we are part of that, so I recognize that some of this is culture shift that we have to take ownership of in terms of dental education. But in dental schools, we focus on the mouth, on the teeth, on the gums, and issues that are happening in the mouth and the orofacial system as a whole. And then in medical school, oftentimes the students don't learn a lot about that part of the body. We need to bring those things back together because you don't see people out there, you know, the mouth is part of the body, right? But I think what's new right now is that there's more and more evidence that oral diseases have an impact in overall health. So there's a relationship between periodontal disease and heart disease, for example, you know, diabetes. Of course, you have to have good oral health to have good nutrition, to be able to chew, to be able to eat well. And that is something that is recognized as an overall health issue, poor nutrition, right? Good oral health is important for your overall well-being. You know, if you have a toothache or if you have something that makes you feel, you know, uncomfortable with your mouth, that has an impact on the ability of students to go to school, people to, you know, do their jobs properly. So there is an economic impact of dental problems, and this adds up, you know, significantly. And if we can make sure that we recognize oral health as part of overall health, I think it will be a little easier perhaps to address this more in an intentional way. And this also would, you know, allow us to do more in terms of medical and dental integration from an education standpoint, but also from a patient care standpoint.
So I was going to ask about that. Forgive me if you've already said it. Are your medical students taking dental classes or required to take some of the classes within the School of Dentistry in order to be able to get through it part of their course?
Yes. So at the University of Washington, our medical students and our dental students have a common curriculum for some of their first and second year of our respective programs. They don't do the entire 2 years together because there's some specificities about each of those programs that are not applicable to the other program, right? But just as an example, in the dental school, for the first year and a half, our dental students take a series of courses called Biomedical Foundations. In fact, some of our first-year students are having a class right now on the renal system, right? So it's about renal system, cardiovascular, you know, or cancer in general. Head and neck anatomy. There's a series of topics that our dental students learn about that is fundamentally biomedical, and that prepares them well for a career as dentists that know much more than just what's inside of the mouth. They can see their patients and begin to address issues that are, for example, patients come in with high blood pressure. Our students are able to have conversations, educated conversations with their patients about, you know, a few things that they can do to address those things. And I think the medical students learn a little more about dentistry as well, so they can also, in their practices, help their patients and their families with questions about oral health. I think that's fundamentally a model that we are aspiring to move towards. We're always going to have physicians, we're always going to have dentists, but I think the more we work together, it's going to be beneficial for our communities, for patients and you know, their communities in general.
Andre Ritter is the Dean of the University of Washington School of Dentistry. Let's stay with the education theme. This week, a dozen exchange students from France finished two-week homestay visits with Inland Northwest families. We met 16-year-old Thomas and 15-year-old Mila at Ferris High School.
We're both in the same high school, and one day they just like sent us a message to, like, oh, there's a trip to the U.S. and are you interested? Just text us if you're interested. And I don't know you, but like, immediately I was like, I want to go. And I immediately sent the answer. I was like, yes, just tell me about it. Just send me the documents. I can fill up everything. And I didn't care like where I would go or with who. I just wanted to go to discover new things.
I asked them if Ferris is different than the high school they attend in Paris.
Oh, yeah. There is a big difference. The first thing it's we can finish earlier here, because in French most of the time we finish at 4:30 p.m. and also the teachers are very friendly here, but in French they are strict. And there is a difference also with subjects.
I think everything is different here because, well, everybody can express themselves without like getting judged or anything. We see people in the hallways whispering, different styles, dyed hair, and it feels like it's normal in here, but in France it's like not. And if you're a little bit different than other people, there's more chance that you will like get bullied or something. But here it just seems so normal, and for different people like as me, I feel so accepted and so welcomed here.
This week, Mila and Thomas and about 10 other students boarded a plane to go back to France. I asked what they would tell their families about their experience.
First of all, I'm going to say how grateful I am to be part of this trip. And I'm going to say all the differences that I saw. And I'm going to say how welcomed I was and how bad I want to return.
Yeah, for me, I will tell them that I will go back here in Ferris High School because that's very, very good.
Thomas stayed with the family of his Ferris French teacher, Rachel Simmons.
It's been really cool for me because I've gotten to share another French speaker in my home with my family. I have two little boys, so they've really enjoyed having a big brother and getting to learn from him.
They had a week of spring break together and a week of school. Mila and Thomas sat in on her French classes.
My students personally still speak a lot of English, but it's been fun for them to practice their French with the students, and they can both understand each other. Like Thomas and Mila are learning English and my students are learning French, so they can both understand that experience of language learning and kind of laugh and compare differences. And even when they make mistakes, it's fun for both of them because they can kind of understand and relate. And my kids were a little nervous to ask the French students things. They would keep looking at me and do they like this? Do they do this? And I asked them. So I think it's been fun for them to be brave and step outside of their box a little bit.
Simmons says exchanges like this are more than just fun. They're opportunities for students to learn about the world outside their communities.
Statewide, our world languages are struggling to stay. And so I just want our community to see that language is always relevant, and it's a great opportunity for our kids to learn skills that they can transfer to any of their careers or areas of interest. And aside from that, it's just fun to have new people.
The exchange program that brought Thomas and Mila to Spokane is based in Oregon. Robert Zink directs Andego Internships Abroad. He says visits from foreign students send ripples through host communities.
Obviously, there's a special relationship when you host someone and you get to spend the entire 2 weeks with them and exploring. But even the students that are exposed to them because they're classmates and outside of the language classroom as well, right? So getting to hear their perspectives in social studies classrooms, even in math and science, right? Hearing the different ways that education is structured and what they learn and enjoy. And we've heard that from teachers in other subject areas, which is really, really validating, I think, is it's not just for language teachers, it's for the entire community to have that exposure and appreciation for other cultures, other people. And so we get to be the vehicle that brings it to communities.
Zink says the positive benefits of foreign exchange programs aren't limited to the host communities. The students take them home too.
Are there things that the French students are going to come back and be like, wow, I think of the French, our French culture or our French system really has this figured out better than the Americans? Yeah, totally. But at the same time, I hear from the French students that come how much they really just love and appreciate the relational aspect of high school, how your high school teachers really can be mentors and not just academic instructors. And so they find that to be a really positive thing.
That's Robert Zink from Andego Internships Abroad. He and Rachel Simmons hope to bring another group of French high school students to the Inland Northwest in the future. Inland Journal is the weekly public affairs program produced by SPR News. Hear it on the radio every Thursday at 12:30, every Saturday at 2:30. Hear it online anytime at SpokanePublicRadio.org, where you can also check out our SPR News Today podcast hosted by Owen Henderson. I'm Doug Nadvornik. We'll be back next week with another Inland Journal.